RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 90 with guest Mark Manassi, recorded Monday, November 24th, 2008. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
Hey, this is Richard Campbell. I'm here in... Where am I, Greg?
We're in Las Vegas, Richard.
We are in Las Vegas. We're not in Orlando. It does get
to be fairly difficult to figure out where we are.
If it's November, this must be Las
this
Vegas.
Time of year.
It must be like, we're here with Mark Manassi, the troublemaker. We were together last week in Barcelona. I never know what's going to happen with the show with you, Mark, but I think I look forward to that, actually.
It is fun.
We talked briefly, sir, just before we sat down to record, where you had thoughts on the whole cloud computing thing that Microsoft's going on, which I really think is presented largely as a development platform. But
well, it always starts out that way.
It doesn't. And then it has
it's
to be
like
deployed.
Drugs, you know, first you make them, and then you actually...
Right.
But the moment you deploy something, you know, now it's an IT problem.
I think it's more than that. So, first of all, for some reason, you know how we get these memes in the industry?
Mm-hmm.
And meme for this year is very smart people that I know doing talks called What IT Looks Like in 10 Years. It's odd. That
oh, yeah, yeah. It's been a bunch of those.
Three different smart people that I know, none of whom I will name, have talks about what the future's like. And there's certain things that they all...
It was a real popular session in Barcelona at the Tech Ed.
Oh, it absolutely was.
Packed house. I think they did it four times or something.
Packed house every time.
Very popular session here as well.
Yeah.
You know, delivered by a different speaker. And again, all good stuff.
Yep.
You know, smart folks. And there's certain things that we keep hearing. One is learn to automate. That I agree with.
Yeah, sure.
I wrote a column 7 years ago where I said, hey, if you don't know VBScript, learn some VBScript. Learn JScript. Learn WMI.
Right.
Because at some point, you know, at the Christmas party, people will be saying, that's the guy that still does stuff with the mouse. You know what I mean? If you are automating, no, if you stop and think about it, you know, 5 years ago, if I'd go to a big company, there were folks who changed passwords all day.
Right.
There were carbon-based life forms that derives their living from changing passwords. I mean, how automatable, how annoying, how boring. So, I mean, some of these jobs going away. But one of the memes is, you're all going to lose your jobs in the sense that whatever it is you're doing now, that ain't going to exist. And the folks in the room here are nodding because they've heard that too. You're frightened?
You look terrified, I can tell.
Anyway,
how many times have I been told that what I'm going to do for a living isn't going to exist in 5 years? Yeah. We get told that all the time.
Well, you know what I was doing, I don't know what, 10 years ago, almost doesn't exist today.
Yeah.
Certainly a lot less. I started out as the webmaster at an online banking company. How often do you hear the actual title of webmaster at a company these days?
That's true.
Not nearly as often as it. And not only that, but a webmaster at one company was different than a webmaster at another company. It was a completely different job. There's a lot jobs do change.
Absolutely. But they also don't change suddenly. It is a transition.
Right.
Well, part of what we're hearing, right, is that the other meme, which is connected to the first one, is the cloud computing stuff.
Right.
So the idea is everything's the cloud. And I the whole phrase cloud annoys me a little bit.
Yep.
Because what I've seen in Carry the Two, 30-something years of being in computing, is that, so initially a new technology comes out. It's a mainframe. And we get it in place, and we have to worry about getting power and cooling and stuff like that. And then we send all of our guys out to IBM school for training,
right.
And they come back, and they write Fortran and COBOL stuff, and maybe somebody goes on to PL1, and somebody does the system operation, that sort of thing. And then we realize that, A, this is kind of a pain in the neck, because we're not a computer company, we make gypsum, or you know, we make talcum powder or something like
right.
that. And so really, the culture doesn't exactly fit. And those IT guys, they say things that we don't understand, so we really don't like them anyway. And they don't seem to take showers as often as we do.
Nice.
And so, you know, if there's something we can do to get rid of them, it'll be cool. And there's things that change. And so our IT guys, we have to constantly send off to school. And so somebody says, you know what? I'm going to go buy an IBM mainframe. And I'm just going to get a big-ass IBM mainframe. And I'm going to sell time to you guys.
Right.
And all you need is some terminals. Now, of course, now we call that outsourcing. Or actually, in those days, we talked about in-house computing. And then the joke was the other stuff was outhouse. You know,
right.
So this is like 30-something years ago.
Right.
So everybody says, you know what? This is great. We'll just pay like one monthly fee. We don't have to worry about when the disk drives go down because these guys back up most of the time. And, you know, if we got a problem, they're there 24 a lot. And then we said, you know what? This is a pain in the ass because PCs came around. And the outsourcing guys, the time-sharing companies. When was the last time you heard the phrase?
Time-sharing.
Yeah.
You know, the time-sharing guys are sort of like, well, you know. And so we started building our own, you know, our own internal PC stuff. Amy, stop taking notes because I'm going to write this column and you can't have it. So, and so the same thing happens. We build information centers or PC help desks or something along those lines. And so we're building this infrastructure in-house and that sort of thing. Well, what later happens? You know, we start looking for help from folks on the outside. Another classic example. A certain large computer company out of Texas sells an awful lot of computers to the world. There's four letters in the name. And they decide they're going to take their tech support and ship it out. And who's the guy who wrote the book, The World is Flat?
Thomas Friedman.
Okay, so what's Friedman saying? That he's basically saying, we built the web so the world can come to us and we lost a lot of support jobs for it because that means it's super easy to go to India.
It goes and both again, directions.
And again, my problem is not with India. They're wonderful folks. I mean, it's a beautiful country and that sort of thing. It's just they happen to be inexpensive.
Right.
And obviously not going to speak English the way that Americans do.
Yes.
And Americans in particular, because we don't really have much... I don't know. I'm not German, so I don't know if this is the case. But I get the impression that Americans are twitchier about understanding accents and odd inflections than the average bear. I don't know if that's true or not.
I think you're probably right.
I'm gonna throw that out there as a tenet. And
leave that one hanging.
Send me email if I'm wrong. And it was a bust. I mean, because they dropped commercial Indian support within, what, like 3, 4, 5 months? Because big customers, Fortune 500s, were saying, this is the support we get? You know what? HP's offered some pretty good prices, and bam, that went away, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
And to this day, I think home support is still that way. And I'm sorry, but it's been a failure. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the Indian folks. No. I'm just saying that the system is broken. So they outsourced it, and oh, guess what's happening? It's coming back. So this in-house, outhouse, the latest version of outhouse is the cloud.
The cloud.
And I think that, you know, at some point, someone's got to point out the emperor's new cloud. I mean, in the sense that, you know, all it really is, it's time sharing.
Yep.
You know, the idea is let's get a lot of machines, a lot of racks, and we'll get specialists to do this stuff.
Yeah. Units
you know
of
what?
Work.
And that sounds kind of cool, particularly in a day where we have good bandwidth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now let's talk about interacting with them. So let's see. When I was a kid, if you wanted television, you climbed up on the roof and you put an aerial up on the chimney.
Right.
And you had to adjust it to figure out where New York was. We lived just outside New York City. In order to get and you know, if the wind blew and moved it around, you had to get up on the ladder and adjust it yourself.
Watch for power lines.
But, you know, fairly early on, there was this notion of CATV, community and television, community antenna television, whereby if you lived in a place where there was mountains between, some kind soul would put a big antenna up on the mountain and then run some wires down and distribute it to the community. That became what we know as cable TV. Internet audience, how responsive do you feel your cable TV provider is? If you've got a problem with that, you give them a call, you find they're really helpful and that sort of thing. What if you want to remove a service? Now, isn't that a pleasant conversation?
Oh, yeah.
Do you like how helpful your phone company is? Do you like the kind of respect you get from the Ford dealer when you bring your $42,000 convertible in to get work done? These are not particularly good experiences for me. So now, let's say you're running an IT shop. Maybe it's... There's an exception to that. If you're running a 15 or 50-person IT shop, a lot of the world really likes Small Business Server.
Right.
I run an online forum. We have a Small Business Server section, which had to be renamed to a Small Business Server Hive. Because, I mean, Small Business Server, it's not an operating system. It's a cult.
It's a cult. You're
you know,
right.
And you know what? And I love it. I love it. Folks like Susan Bradley,
Susan Bradley, the SBS Diva.
You know, I mean, they're a wonderful source of information. Nick Whittam is a guy who's on my forum, and he's like one of my administrators and super, super smart guy. And it's a great community. Even better, it's provided an opportunity for another small business. The guy who works out of his house supporting 30 businesses that have small businesses.
Right.
And the cool thing is, like, you can remotely support it. It's a wonderful cottage industry that Microsoft has created, and my hat is off to Microsoft. Mm-hmm. They did a great job there.
I don't know that it was intentional. They wanted to.
Absolutely,
they wanted a low-end entry point into the suite of server products.
You're 100% right. And I feared that when Centro came out, yesterday was the release for Centro.
Right, that's EBS.
So they didn't do a physical launch. They did a virtual launch, and they asked me to be one of the guest speakers. And so we talked about that. I am not an SBS or an EBS expert, but I've been on the outside looking in enough to know that this is a wonderful thing. And I thought it would be a terrible thing if Microsoft, with Cougar, latest version of Small Business Server, kind of like made it possible for big providers to support small business better than small projects. But they didn't do that.
Right. The channel has stayed the same.
Exactly.
The support channel has
exactly.
stayed the same.
Yeah. But there's a big difference between having Susan run your... You being one of Susan's 50 clients or you being one of Nick's 30 clients and going to Cloud Inc. Because, I mean, if you call up Susan and you're one of her 30 clients or something like that and you're not responding and you say, screw you, I'll have somebody else do it. That's a significant piece. If you're one of 30,000 clients and you're not one of the three Fortune 500 that this guy serves, yeah. What kind of service are you going to get? Well, let's see. To give you a little hint, I remember the days when I'd buy Windows directly from Microsoft.
Yeah.
And then one day I got a letter that says, I'm sorry, but we don't sell to people like you anymore. Go find somebody in the channel.
I remember
when you could call Microsoft and get help for free.
Try using Gmail or any of Google's stuff and then try to make a phone call and talk to somebody.
How about being a Google advertiser?
There is no phone call.
How about being a Google advertiser?
Yeah.
One of the people provides them their revenue. Have you ever talked to anybody who's tried to talk to someone at Google? Do you know how Google advertising works?
Vaguely.
This is great. So I sell Windows Server 2008 classes, all right?
Right?
And I do all the marketing myself. But let's just say that I wanted, if you typed in Windows Server 2008 training, that I came up first. Here's the way I get that. I say to Google, I want to buy these words. How much does it cost? They say, send us some money.
Bid.
Right. What do you mean? Yeah. Just send us some money. They're not going to tell you how much the other guys are paying. And so what ends up happening is you see where you are, and you just keep writing checks until you get to the top. And then somebody else tries a bigger check. And it's infernally brilliant. I mean, it is fiendishly brilliant.
It's a closed bidding system.
And it's done well for them. But try to get somebody on the phone. I mean, I know companies that are writing six-figure checks to Google and...
No support.
So, I mean, do I want cloud computing? Hell no! I mean, if I'm Ford Motor Company, sure. I mean, I'm sure I'll get the proper respect because if Ford's got a problem with Windows, Microsoft fixes it.
Right.
And I'm not dissing Microsoft. They've got...
But I can't imagine a Fortune 500 using this technology. They've already got the infrastructure anyway. And B, what about the regulatory issues? What about the SOX issues around where's your data? Who owns it? Who's maintaining it? How is it backed up? Like, you've lost control of all of that.
Actually, I think it obviates the SOX issues. No, I agree with you on
sometimes
that.
Sometimes.
But I believe there are some Fortune 500s that would definitely want to embrace that. And also...
The question is, who's going to be first? Because you've got to get through that initial audit.
Somebody's going to show up on the cover of Fortune for being brave.
Yeah, it'll happen.
In the end analysis, unfortunately, we're a materialist society. We're becoming a more and more materialist society. And it exudes itself. I was going to say express, but I like exude better, even though it's not the right word, in the form of the stock market. I mean, look, if you and I ran a company that cleared $100 billion in profit every year, and next year we cleared $100 billion, our stock would tank. There has to be growth.
Yep.
There has to be growth. And so we find new ways to squeeze an extra buck out. And how do we do it? Well, let's outsource.
Cloud computing.
And cloud computing is another way to do a dumbass move and outsource. Let's be clear. There are some folks that will do a great job with their hosting providers. There's no questions about it. But they can't do it for very long now, can they? Because when the low-cost operator comes in for 2% less, well, even if General Motors wants to stay with me, their shareholders are going to say, well, why are you spending this extra money when you could be saving the 2% and going over these other guys? And as always, it's the lowest common denominator. I think cloud computing is a terrible, terrible thing, except for one thing. I think it will annoy us so much that there'll be a market opportunity for the next little guy in a garage. Whether it's a Linux shop or Bill Gates II or Steve Jobs or something along those lines.
Now, right now, Microsoft's talking about they're going to run this cloud themselves and we're going to buy from them. Right?
Would be one of many providers. The whole point of Azure is that with Azure, you'll be able to build your own cloud.
Is that really true? Are we ultimately going to be running our own servers that are running Azure?
I know some guys that are doing it in Ireland, yeah.
All right. Well, that, to me, makes more sense that if I'm a big company and concerned about where my data lives, that I can run this infrastructure because it's supposedly infinitely scalable.
Infinite's a big word, Richard.
I totally agree, but I'm just reading off the marketing brochures here, right?
And think about what they don't talk about on the marketing brochures.
Well, they didn't talk about price.
Well, Steve Riley does a very nice talk about virtualization and security.
Right.
And I'm glad he did it because I had half of those ideas. Steve had twice as many, and he wrote the presentation, so I don't have to.
Great.
But, I mean, a question that I've wondered about is, okay, so you're running my web server, and you're running my certificate server.
Yeah.
Okay. Whose physical machines whose other virtual machines are sitting on the same physical machine?
Right.
We tend to think that virtual machines are their own little island universes, but there are theoretical hacks. I could imagine a future world where some virtual driver gets hacked, which means allows me to crawl into another virtual machine. So gosh, I mean, now I'm thinking, do I really want my three virtual servers sitting amongst the 47 others on the same machine? And oh, by the way, two of those guys are my competitors?
Yeah.
Yep. And I don't even know it.
Yeah, and there's no way to know.
Because when we had hosting, Hosting has that same problem.
Yep.
I mean, you know, Dell doesn't much like having their order online system on the same box as HP does.
Yeah.
And so you've got to play this game where you put them in different cages so that when the Dell guy comes once a year to go look at the, oh, look, it's in a different cage than the, you
know. So everything is, yeah, everything is
and
fine.
And in China, I'm told that there are assembly lines where there are assembly, no-name assembly companies where the HP stuff is one line and the Dell stuff is right next to it.
Absolutely.
You know, and they only get marked when the labels down at the end.
I don't think it's... the motherboards still are different.
Yeah, you'd have to hope anyway. That and then it's... I am downtime, recovery time, performance complaints.
I think those things are going to be relatively soluble, but you know, you're right. I mean, I live in a hurricane-prone area.
Yeah.
And... I run a business internet service, so I mean, presumably I should be getting the same respect and love as, you know, the gas station down the street or something like that. If my internet provider goes down, I mean, their whole point of view is, hey man, we're having a hurricane, you know? I'm like, hey, yeah, I know that, but I got clients in all 24 time zones.
Yeah.
And there's people from all 24 time zones coming and visiting my website. And the reason I'm paying you jerks $200 a month rather than the $25 a month is because you're supposed to have this stuff backed up.
Yeah.
And at least this way, if I do it myself, for a while there, I had a wireless system where I stuck it on top of my roof, and I had a buddy that was 20 miles inland, and you could get like about, it was like 9.8 megabits per mm-hmm. second or something like that, and he was my backup. It was too much trouble to maintain it, but at least if I'm doing it myself, I've got my own.
Well, and you have nobody else to blame but yourself, too. I mean, you have options.
Exactly.
You want it fixed faster? Get moving.
Right.
I think the frustrating thing is the idea of sitting on a phone trying to figure out what's going on. I think the performance one is huge. Because we really, now you play the game of it's your code versus, you know, it's your box. Except now you're playing with somebody who doesn't answer the phone anyway.
Exactly.
You know, when it's your own organization and your CTO can grab the director of IT and grab the director of development, put him in table, so you people play nice or get new jobs, we have some recourse for dealing with these kinds of conflicting problems.
And how important done is
IT? I mean, how important is IT? I remember thinking in around 1987 or 1990, somewhere in there, that, you know, I used to go to the computer a few hours a day to type my memos or run my spreadsheets or my economic simulations. I was an economist at the time. I live with my computer as well as its little buddy.
Yeah.
I don't go away from the little buddy, particularly at a conference, because I don't remember where the heck I was supposed to be for this thing.
Well, how did we get to this point where there's a discussion I have with my wife when we're going on vacation of what computers we're going to bring or not bring?
Well, how can the two of you play head-to-head Halo on vacation if you don't have both computers?
Yeah. Well, and it's, yeah, the fact that we would go down to... And actually, I don't think we've managed to do this yet. Even our, you know, wilderness vacation meant we were down to one machine, and it was a small one. And it actually stayed in its cover for a couple of those
days. Did you power it with a solar array or something? Or
how is this the Galapagos we're talking about?
The Galapagos, we had the little EEPC.
You took a computer to the Galapagos.
It stayed in its bag most of the time, but when the airports, it came out.
It's got to be a felony or something.
I went to Sao Paulo last year. It was my first trip south
Brazil.
Of the equator. I'm embarrassed to say that. And it's the second largest city in the world. Everybody knows it's Brazil. Anyway, so I noticed on the plane that as soon as we crossed the equator, then Windows stopped working.
Nice.
All the time zone stuff, I had to reset it for Sao Paulo before things worked. It was astounding. Did you do the thing where you saw whether the water went clockwise or counterclockwise?
Oh, down? Well, because if you go... You got to go to Galapagos, you go to Ecuador, and
everybody
that's literally
exactly. to Snopes.com
the equator runs right by there. They actually
isn't
have
it
a
odd
whole
that the name
space.
Ecuador sounds so much like equator?
Isn't it odd?
The coincidence is
very odd. So yeah,
like
we went through
States,
the whole thing.
Independence Day falls on July 4th a tremendous amount of time.
Man,
it's just unbelievable.
Much of the time,
exactly.
Oh my goodness! There's two different incarnations here of Azure, right? There's the Azure that is the virtual machine thing, and then there's the Azure that is the coding approach to all of this. Where you're actually supposed to write code specific for Azure.
Yeah, I guess you have a different vision of Azure than I do.
Well, and it, so I mean, I definitely have that one foot in dev and one foot in IT.
Okay.
And so I see, you know, I pick up on the dev side of things. And most people are looking purely the virtual, from an IT perspective, I think we think about the virtual machine thing. But the development model, this is getting closer to EC2, like you know, Amazon's offering for elastic computing, those
That's
sorts
true.
Of things. Where now the whole idea is we're actually giving instructions to this system on how to run the app so that it can scale.
Writing in a way that is cloud aware, if you will.
Virtual friendly. No, and that's a great thing. Let's be clear. That's a great thing. I just got finished talking about that. I had to do a talk called Hyper-V Without the Hype. And it's just an overview about how Hyper-V works. And one of the things I talk about is that, and this is one of the most subtle things about Hyper-V, is that You know, with something like VMware, or for that matter, most of the Microsoft virtual tools thus far, when you build an operating system and you put it in a virtual machine manager, that OS is clueless about the fact that it's running on virtual hardware.
Right.
And that's the plan. That's why VMware is a genius product, because
nobody told the OS that it was running in VM.
It works. I mean, how many virtual products have we seen, juggler products have we seen that have kind of sucked dead donkeys through a garden hose? You know, but in this one, I've had maybe two blue screens from VMware in the last 7 years.
Yeah,
you know, one
it's
of
amazing.
Which I caused by unplugging a drive while I was trying to write to it.
Yeah, don't do that.
No. Don't. Important safety tip. You know, but then there's the Zen server guys. And the Zen server guys, this is the open source virtual machine product. And,
yep.
And for those who have only heard Zen, but let's, I mean, here was the brilliant insight. The brilliant insight was, you know what? Why don't we just modify the operating system to make it copacetic with the fact that it's running in a virtual machine manager? Oh, well, of course, it's open source. It's Linux guys. They have the source code, so that's why they think that way. It's
right.
A great idea. So one of the cool things about Hyper-V is that with Hyper-V, you get best of both worlds, in the sense that you can just, you know, bung an operating system in there, and it thinks it's on actual hardware, and it works just fine. But if you want maximum performance, there are 5 operating systems that where you can modify the kernel. You actually modify the kernel and the memory manager and some of the drivers, and it knows it's in a virtual environment. And the fun thing is, when the Zen guys came up with this, an operating system that knows it's in a virtual environment in Zen is called an enlightened operating
nice.
System.
Nice.
You love that, right?
It's enlightened.
So there is enlightenment. There are enlightenment drivers in Hyper-V. And so you can run XP Service Pack 3, you can run 2003 Service Pack 2, Vista Service Pack 1, or 2008 RTM, or SUSE Linux Enterprise, I think it is. And I think Red Hat may do it as well eventually. And it's in this enlightenment. So here we have the first step, right? The first step is now the operating system is understanding, hey, it's a virtual world.
You know where I'm living.
If we can start writing our line of business applications, our VB applications, our .NET applications, whatever, understanding we're in a virtual world, then those are great things, because that means the management tools. I mean, Perfmon runs kind of stupid on a virtual machine.
Yeah.
You know, when those things start to change in virtual, no, don't get me wrong, virtual's a great thing. Clouds worry me. You know, too much clouds, and it rains.
Nice. Yeah, so. Okay. You're working your metaphors here. I see an article coming.
Oh, absolutely.
So what's the alternative here? You really think we're going to go... Gartner's still calling cloud computing hype. Like, I've yet to see the winning... I've yet to see a customer out there going, my business is successful because of cloud of any incarnation.
Whoever said that is mistaken, because what is the single ugliest Microsoft popular server platform to have to maintain?
Single ugliest?
Ugliest. Of all the applications that are built for the Windows Server
Exchange. Platform. Exchange.
Easily. Easily.
Why?
It's not an operating system. It's a way of life.
Yeah.
I mean, I try to run Exchange servers now and then because I know AD, so everyone assumes I know Exchange.
Right.
And so I say, all right, let me dog food this thing, and I'll set up an Exchange server. And I do this every couple of years, and it makes me want to do that. I want to exchange the server for another server.
Nice.
Yeah, after a little while. And I end up running I go back to SendMail or PostFix or you know, something along these lines.
Exchange 2007.
Right. And the reason is, look, Microsoft's doing the right thing. Their big clients are Fortune 500 clients.
Mm-hmm.
This whole unified communication stuff makes sense. And pretty soon, phone companies will be good for bandwidth, and that's about it. They will not be providing dial tone.
There'll be utilities.
Well, this is where SBS and EBS, with a lot of the auto configuration and sort of the defaults and stuff, can be really beneficial for medium and small companies as well.
No questions about it. And I wish that they'd offer that version of Exchange without having to get with... I mean, SBS involves too much of the... You know, the prosthetic goes on. There's
yeah.
The laser
yeah, you must
the eye.
Believe.
Resistance is fuel.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're also limited. I mean, for example, you're only allowed... You can have multiple domain controllers. I know that. But only one machine has to hold all the FISMO roles.
Right.
That's friggin' annoying. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you can only have one domain easily. I mean, there are things, and again, there are things that you can do but would violate the license. And so, I mean, I wish there were a smoother path from SBS because I would be more of an SBS guy at that point. Anyway, so a lot of people feel the way that I do about Exchange. And so there's a lot of Exchange hosting going on.
Yes, there is.
It's astounding, man. You know, dude, that's the cloud.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
it's just Steam, but it's the cloud, you know?
Yeah.
I used to run my own Exchange, and now I have a hosting provider, and I'm much happier.
I am this close to doing it because I'm so tired of running my own mail server. The only reason I do it is my online forum. Believe it or not, we send out like almost millions of emails a day because on my online forum, if you want to subscribe to something, you know.
Right, exactly.
I'm to the point where I'm going to build a separate server just for the forum.
Just for the outbound mail.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it's an, yeah,
So, we're clouding now. I mean, it's, again, all the cloud is it just... Outsourcing.net. That's, you know, it's just, it's the latest outsourcing story.
Right.
And I would, you know, I would challenge all of our listeners to say, how many of you are really happy you outsourced? A few things, sure. I have a generator in the back of my house because we live in the middle of nowhere, right around the H. And when the hurricane takes the power away for 6 days, I want to be able to provide my web services. But I'm glad I don't have to provide electricity every day.
Right.
You know, that stuff makes sense. I just, given how important IT is, that was kind of the road I was going down a while back, and I got sidetracked, sorry. I mean, I can't live without IT.
Right.
I would be giving up so much of the richness of the information, the immediacy of the information, the ability. I don't have any friends within 100 miles of me. It's not true exactly, but I mean, you know, a lot of my closest friends and the people that I most dearly love live hundreds and thousands of miles away. And I'm sure that everybody who's listening to this has that same situation.
Sure.
If you're an IT-centric person, does it make our lives worse? I don't know. I'm kind of happy with my life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. There's just a point at which as long as we live in a world where shareholders, where we have to be publicly held in order to gain the wealth and liquidity that we want, and as long as the ethos of the market pushes us to minimum cost, what we're saying is, it's like saying, I'm going to buy a house. Let's go for the lowest bidder.
Right.
There's just stuff that I don't think we go for the lowest bidder for. And anything that becomes part of a public or publicly held organization, by its nature,
and must
become
lowest.
Unless you manage to become the cachet guys. You know, unless you manage to become the Hyatts versus the Holiday Inns.
Right.
You know, there's a situation where there's allowance for different strata.
Perceived value.
Yeah, I mean, there's some company like, Rackspace, for example, is a company that really pushes that we do excellent customer service and you're going to pay us more for it. But it's going to be, you're going to get, for the money you're spending, you're going to get great service technically and people-wise, right? So maybe that's an example of where a company is recognizing that commodity and the lowest price is not necessarily the best, and that the people that they want to serve and that matter and that are probably most willing to pay, you know, solid money over time are
what was your last excellent cut? I mean, like, because, you know, the excellence, right, is the creation of delight in the minds of your customer. That's one definition.
Enlightenment, yes.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know, what was the... No, delight, I'm sorry. So what was the... what was the last experience like that you had from any large corporation?
That's the thing, is from large corporations, you just don't get that too much.
Yeah.
From
And yet we give them all our money.
From medium-sized companies, I find a lot of the time that if I go to a medium-sized company that provides a really great service,
really?
That quite often that's where you're going to get the best match for
So you have to wonder if we're not going to see this happen with Azure. That, I mean, if I'm an ISP and I'm looking, and Azure has now been announced, I'm like, oh my goodness, am I in trouble here? You know, here's a whole other service, or am I looking at it, this is a service line I can add to make my already happy customers even happier. I mean, that diversity, so that you can go into the Susan Bradley model of, I have a handful of customers I take very good care of, and this is another service I offer, versus
if Susan's smart, she wouldn't do that, because, again, you know, there's lots of folks in the Yellow Pages who do consulting.
Right.
And if one looks around, one can certainly find a small business server person. But if you've got somebody you like and you've got that personal relationship... Look, I have this problem. I have this little book that I wrote 15 years ago about NT, that it was about what I really knew and what I really understood, and I had it down to the bare metal.
Right.
And then I thought, well, let's do a back office book and forget about it. I mean, the last 15 years has been a progressive process of giving things away. I guess I don't have to know that. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, oh, network clustering. Oh, I guess I don't have time for that, you know? And but I mean, in order to try to cover this stuff, in any of my books that have gone to 13 editions or that sort of thing, you end up going to co-authors. Love my co-authors. They're terrific folks. But I mean, there is a little teeny tiny piece. It's just the ouvre. There's just something small that isn't there when it's not my voice and when it's not whatever authority I can bring. I'm not saying they're dumber than me. I'm dumber than all my co-authors. I'm just saying...
It's a different flavor.
It's a different flavor, and I think that there's a different richness to an extent. Now, I try to go back and bump that stuff up and try to make the book as good as I can possibly do it.
Sure.
But, I mean, it's become so huge that my choices at this point for... I'm thinking now about what book I'm going to write for 2008 R2.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, I want to figure out how to get back to a 700-page book where I do the whole thing all by myself. And that means I'm not going to talk about WSUS.
Right.
Maybe there'll be a newsletter on it, or maybe I'll point you to another resource or something like that. And I don't quite know how to do it yet. But
the idea of distilling down...
Maybe infinite scalability isn't really possible.
Yeah.
Maybe infinite scalability isn't a good idea. If there were infinite scalability, then ultimately, let's see, how many online auction companies are there? That's right. There's well, logically, if you want to put your stuff out there, you want the most eyeballs, which means there's a monopoly in the form of eBay.
Right.
You know? And it means that Amazon will continue to probably gain more market share. Maybe there'll be a final battle then versus buy.com or, you know, maybe iTunes, who knows. Maybe pretty soon Apple will just, like, start selling washing machines on the iPhone with iTunes. Don't give Steve an idea. Can we erase that?
Make sure that doesn't go out. Make that go away.
So, I don't know. Maybe I'm just an old man. But I miss the hands-on. I miss being able to talk to someone on the phone and get an answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And someone, and nowadays, even when you talk to a human, many times it's just someone who's reading off scripts.
Yeah.
You know, and that I might as well be speaking to an IVR at that point.
Thank you for calling, insert name here.
Yeah.
Mark, we're coming down to the last bit of time. Any final thoughts? Anything we're going to hear from you in the immediate future? I hear an article's coming, and maybe a new book.
I think I hear
well, you know, if you don't get my, I do a column for the magazine every month.
Yeah,
it's called Special Update, and it's free. It shows up in your mailbox. Actually, it doesn't show up in your mailbox anymore. Now you get like the first paragraph, and it says click here to go to the website so that they can show you a lot of ads.
Right.
But it's a great column once you get there. I also do an online newsletter myself that I don't get to as often as I should, and that's at www.manassi.com. And Manassi is M-I-N-A-S-I. That's it.
Yeah. And I think this is our Christmas show too, isn't it?
I think you're right.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa, you know.
And all that stuff.
Merry Hanukkah, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I hope you're listening to this podcast somewhere in January and not on Christmas Day. That would be bad.
You're saying our Jewish listeners have something wrong if they're not?
Isn't it Hanukkah?
Hanukkah, you fool.
Hanukkah.
I can't hawk a loogie like that.
You're right, Hanukkah is late this December.
You just lost 5 million American listeners, you both.
Wait, come back.
Oh, Mark. Thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks, always
Mark.
Good.
It's good to see you.
Thanks, guys.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.